fear of country retirement, blessed with so many resources within myself. But, said I, do not think I can live without something of a musical society. I condition for nothing else, but without music, life would be a blank to me. We have been calling at Vandal's. Very pleasant people they both seem to be. Mrs. Weston seems an excellent creature. Quite a firm favourite with me already, I assure you. She was your governess, I think. I was rather astonished to find her so very ladylike.
Mrs. Weston's manners were always particularly good.
And who do you think came in while we were there? Knightley himself. Was not it luck? I think my caro sposo need not be ashamed of his friend. Knightley is quite the gentleman. And Jane Fairfax is absolutely charming. I quite rave about Jane Fairfax, a sweet creature with such talents. And her situation is so calculated to affect one. Whatever advantages she may have enjoyed at the Campbells are so palpably at an end. Miss Woodhouse, we must exert ourselves and endeavour to do something for her. She is in such obscurity, so thrown away.
I'm not aware how you, or indeed any of Miss Fairfax's acquaintance here, who have known her longer than yourself, can show her any other attention.
My dear Miss Woodhouse, a vast deal may be done by those who dare to act. Well, now it is time to be gone. Goodbye, Miss Woodhouse. Mr. Woodhouse?
Mrs. Elton?
Goodbye.
Bye. Hey, well, my dear, considering we never saw her before, she seems a very pretty sort of young lady. She speaks a little too quick, which rather hurts the ear.
Insufferable woman! Huh? Oh, worse than I suppose. Absolutely insufferable. Knightley? Never even met him before in her life, and to call him Knightley. A little, vulgar, upstart thing. I never met her equal. She's self-important, presuming, familiar, ignorant, and ill-bred.
Familiar, ignorant, and ill-bred. She has little beauty and little accomplishment, but so little judgment that she thinks herself come to enliven and improve our neighbourhood.
She has made a great favourite of Jane Fairfax.
Oh, poor Jane Fairfax. She's not deserved this. The kindness and protection of Mrs. Elton. Oh.
Miss Fairfax is as capable as any of us of forming a just opinion of Mrs. Elton. Could she have chosen with whom to associate, she would not have chosen her. But she receives attentions from Mrs. Elton, which nobody else pays her.
Well, I know how highly you think of Jane Fairfax.
Yes. Yes, anybody may know how highly I think of her.
And yet perhaps you may be hardly aware yourself how highly it is. The extent of your admiration may take you by surprise one day.
So, you have been settling that I should marry Jane Fairfax?
No, indeed I've not. You've scolded me too much for matchmaking for me to presume to take such a liberty with you. Upon my word, I've not the smallest wish for your marrying Jane Fairfax. Jane anybody. You would not come in and sit with us in this comfortable way if you were married.
Well, it will never be, I can assure you. Miss Fairfax, I dare say, would not have me if I were to ask her. And I'm very sure I shall not ask her.
You are not vain, Mr. Knightley. I say that for you.
Jane Fairfax is a very charming young woman. But not even Jane Fairfax is perfect. She has not the open temper a man would wish for in a wife. Oh. The fire has got low.
Well, Mrs. Weston, what do you say now to Mr. Knightley's marrying Jane Fairfax?
Why, really, dear Emma, I say that he is so very much occupied by the idea of not being in love with her that I should not wonder if it were to end in his being so at last.
Oh. I cannot do less than the others. A dinner there must be for the Eltons.
As long as I do not sit at the bottom of the table, my dear.
Well, the persons to invite require a little thought. The Eltons, the Westons, and Mr. Knightley. Harriet begs not to come. Mm. Who
Who should be our eighth, do you think? Papa, you know Miss Fairfax. She'll be sitting next to you.
We met this morning when I was returning from a walk before breakfast. I hope you did not venture far, Miss Fairfax. I'm sure you must have been wet.
I only went to the post office and reached home before the rain was much. I always fetch the letters when I'm here. A walk before breakfast does me good.
Not a walk in the rain, I should imagine. Dr. Perry says it is the worst thing for the constitution.
No, but it did not absolutely rain when I set out.
Young ladies should take care of themselves. Young ladies are delicate plants. My dear, did you change your stockings?
Yes, Mr. Woodhouse. I did indeed, and I'm very much obliged by your kind solicitude about me.
Oh, my dear Jane, what is this I hear? Going to the post office in the rain? This must not be, I assure you. Oh, you sad girl, how could you do such a thing? It is a sign that I was not there to take care of you. Mrs. Weston, did you ever hear the like? You and I must positively assert our authority.
My advice, I certainly do feel tempted to give.
Miss Fairfax, you must not run such risks.
Oh, she shall not do such a thing again. We will not allow her.
There must be some arrangement made. Ah, the man who fetches our letters every morning shall inquire for yours, too.
Bring them to you. That will obviate all difficulties.
You are extremely kind, but I cannot give up my early walk. I am advised to be out of doors as much as I can, and I must walk somewhere, and the post office is an object. And upon my word, I have scarcely ever had a bad morning before.
The post office has a great charm at one period of our lives. When you have lived to my age, you will begin to think letters are never worth going through the rain for.
My dear Jane, say no more about it. The thing is determined.
Excuse me, I cannot by any means consent to such an arrangement so needlessly troublesome to your servant. If the errand were not a pleasure to me, it could be done, as it always is when I am not here, by my grandmama's girl.
Oh, my dear, but so much as Patty has to do. And it is a kindness to employ our men.
Mrs. Weston.
And have you found a position yet, Jane? Here is April come. Oh, I'm quite anxious about you. June will be here soon. Have you really heard of nothing?
I have not even made any inquiry. I do not wish to make any yet.
But we cannot begin too early. You are not aware of the difficulty in procuring exactly the desirable thing.
I not aware? Dear Mrs. Elton, who cannot have thought of it as I have done?
But you have not seen so much of the world as I have. You do not know how many candidates there always are for the first situations. I saw a vast deal of that in the neighbourhood round Maple Grove. A cousin of Mr. Sapling, Mrs. Bragg, had an infinity of applications. Everybody was anxious to be in her family, for she moves in the first circle. Wax candles in the schoolroom.
I would not wish you to take the trouble of making any inquiries at present. For 2 or 3 months longer, I shall remain where I am and as I am.
Oh, there is Mr. Weston.
Good evening, good evening. Well, Mrs. Weston, I have a letter.
Oh.
Read it, read it. It will give you pleasure. Oh. Only a few lines.
It is from Frank.
Well, he is coming, you see?
Oh.
Good news, I think. His aunt is moving to Richmond for her nerves, and what are 9 miles to a young man?
Oh,
so we shall have our ball after all.
Oh, God.
Emma, Frank, do you find everything to your taste?
I have a great curiosity to see Mrs. Elton. Oh. I've heard so much of her. It cannot be long, I think, before she comes. Ah, here is a carriage now. I'm forgetting I'm not acquainted with her. I've never seen either Mr. or Mrs. Elton, so I have no business to put myself forward.
Mrs. Elton, allow me to introduce you to my son, Mr. Frank Churchill.
Oh, Mr. Churchill, so pleased to make your acquaintance.
And I to make yours, Mrs. Elton. Were you not to have brought Miss Bates and Miss Fairfax?
So you were, and I forgot. Mr. Eve, send our carriage for them now.
Very well. Mrs. Elton, you will be so good as to give me your opinion.
Why, I shall endeavour to, Mr. Churchill.
In your opinion, does it look like rain?
Like rain?
It is clear Frank Churchill is less in love with me than he has been. He's called on me only once, these 10 days. But there is a restlessness about him. Well, he's as ready to talk and laugh as ever, but his spirits are flustered. He must dread my returning power.
There are the ladies. I've just arrived.
Excuse me, Mrs. Elton. I will see that there are umbrellas, Father. Miss Bates must not be
forgotten. Oh, a fine young man indeed, Mr. Weston. You know, I candidly told you I should form my opinion, and I'm happy to say that I'm extremely pleased with him. So truly a gentleman, without the least conceit or puppyism. You must know I have a vast dislike to puppies. Ah, quite a horror of them. They were never tolerated at Maple Grove.
So very obliging of you, Mr. Churchill.
Was there rain?
No, no rain at all. Nothing to signify. Well, this is brilliant indeed. Oh, this is admirable. It's so well lighted up. Jane, look. Did you ever see anything? Oh, Mr. Weston, you must really have had Aladdin's lamp.
Charming, Miss Fairfax. How do you like my gown? I have a horror of overtrimming. Nobody can think less of dress in general than I do, but on an occasion such as this, when everybody's eyes are so much upon me, and in compliment to the Westons, who I have no doubt are giving this ball chiefly to do me honour, I would not wish to be inferior to others. I see very
well. How do you like Mrs. Elton?
Not at all.
You are ungrateful.
It has just occurred to Mrs. Weston that Mrs. Elton must be asked to begin the ball. She will expect it. And so we cannot give you that distinction, Emma. And what are we to do for a proper partner for her? She will think you ought to ask her, Frank.
I am an engaged man, am I not, Miss Woodhouse? You will have to dance with Mrs. Elton yourself.
Me?
Miss Woodhouse and I will follow.
Oh, there is Mr. Knightley, and I must stand as by where he ought to be. He ought to be dancing, not classing himself with the husbands, fathers, and whist players. He's too young. He is often observing me. I will not flatter myself that he is thinking of my dancing. And he cannot be criticizing my behavior. I'm not flirting with Frank. He looks very grave. I shall catch his eye and make him smile at me. There. Oh, Harriet has no partner. Oh, she's the only lady sitting down.
Mrs. Weston will find her a partner. Look, she's going about it now.
Mr. Elton?
Most readily, Mrs. Weston, if you will dance with me.
Me? Oh, no. Ah. I would get you a better partner than myself. I am no dancer. But there is a young lady disengaged whom I should be very glad to see dancing.
Oh.
Miss Smith.
Miss Smith? Oh, I had not observed. You are extremely obliging, but my dancing days are over, Mrs. Weston. If you will excuse me.
Poor Harriet. Oh, he's refused her. Oh, and now he's revelling in it and telling Mr. Knightley of it. Oh, I can't look.
Miss Smith?
Mr. Knightley. Mr. Knightley has taken pity on her and is leading her into the set. Oh, he's a good dancer too. And Harriet looks so happy. All smiles, and she's fairly flying down the middle. Mr. Knightley, I want to thank you for dancing with Harriet.
Elton aimed at wounding more than Harriet. Emma, why is it that they are your enemies? Confess that you did want him to marry Harriet.
Oh, I did, and they cannot forgive me.
I shall not scold you. I leave you to your own reflections.
Can you trust me with such flatterers? Does my vain spirit ever tell me I'm wrong?
Not your vain spirit, but your serious spirit. If the one leads you wrong, I'm sure the other tells you of it.
I do own myself to have been completely mistaken in Mr. Elton. There is a littleness about him which you discovered and which I did not.
And in return for your acknowledging so much, I will do you the justice to say that you would have chosen better for him than he has chosen for himself. Harriet Smith has some first-rate qualities, which Mrs. Elton is entirely without.
Come,
Miss Woodhouse, Miss Otwick, Miss Fairfax. What are you all doing? Come, Emma, set your companions the example. Everybody is lazy. Everybody is asleep.
I'm ready whenever I wanted.
Whom are you going to dance with?
With you, if you will ask me.
Will you?
Indeed I will. You're showing that you can dance. And you know, we're not really so much brother and sister as to make it at all improper.
Brother and sister. No, indeed.
A very agreeable ball. I am glad Mr. Knightley and I came to an agreement about the Eltons. And his praise of Harriet was peculiarly satisfying. Mr. Woodhouse! What's happened, Harriet?
I found you just now on the Richmond Road.
Oh.
Sit here, Miss Smith.
Oh, thank you.
I'm afraid she's had a considerable fright.
Oh, you look so pale.
I went for a walk with Miss Bickerton, you know, when we suddenly perceived a party of gypsies. Miss Bickerton was excessively frightened. She gave a great scream and, calling on me to follow her, ran up a steep bank and disappeared.
Oh.
But I could not follow. I promised them money. I took out my purse and gave them a shilling and begged them not to use me ill. But the whole gang surrounded me and asked for more.
Oh, Harriet.
That was when Mr. Churchill found me.
I had by most fortunate chance had my leaving Highbury delayed till that moment. I was a little later than intended, having to return a pair of scissors I'd borrowed the night before from Mrs. Bates. But now I must return to Richmond. Oh. These several delays have left me with not a moment to live.
Well, I will look after her. Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Churchill. We're deeply grateful. Harriet will stay with me and I will look after her.
Good day.
Bye.
Madness. I can see nothing at all extraordinary in Mr. Elton now. I do not care whether I meet him or not, except that of the two. I'd rather not see him. And to convince you that I have been speaking truth, I am now going to destroy what I ought to have destroyed long ago, what I never ought to have kept. Cannot you guess what this parcel holds?
Most precious treasures.
Yes. Now, do you recollect this?
No, indeed I do not.
Dear me, I should not have thought it possible you could forget. Do you remember his cutting his finger with your new penknife and your recommending court plaster? But as you had none about you and knew I had, you desired me to supply him. And so I took mine out and cut him a piece. But it was a great deal too large, and he cut it smaller and kept playing some time with what was left before he gave it back to me. And so then, in my nonsense, I could not help making a treasure of it. So I put it by, never to be used, and looked at it now and then as a great treat.
Oh, my sins! Then I had plenty of court plaster about me all the while in my pocket. I deserve to be under a continual blush for the rest of my life.
Oh, I'm sure I never suspected it. You did it so naturally. Look, here is something still more valuable, because this is what really did once belong to him, which the court plaster never did. One morning, he wanted to make a memorandum in his pocketbook. Mm. It was about spruce beer. But when he took out his pencil, there was so little lead that he soon cut it all away and it would not do. So you lent him another, and this was left on the table as good for nothing. I kept my eye on it, and as soon as I dared, caught it up and never parted with it again from that moment. I have nothing more to show you or to say, except that I am now going to throw them both on the fire, and I wish you to see me do it. There. Oh. And there is an end, thank heaven, of Mr. Elton. I should never marry.
Never marry? Well, this is a new resolution. I hope this is not because of Mr. Elton.
Mr. Elton, indeed. Oh, no. He is so superior to Mr. Elton. It is a pleasure to me to admire him at a distance.
I am not at all surprised at you, Harriet. The service he rendered you was enough to warm your heart.
When I saw him coming, his noble look and my wretchedness before, in one moment such a change, from perfect misery to perfect happiness. Oh.
Though it is very natural, and it is honourable, I think, to choose so well and so gratefully. But I am determined against all interference. Let no name ever pass our lips. He is your superior, no doubt. But yet, Harriet, more wonderful things have happened. There have been matches of greater disparity.
Oh, Miss Woodhouse.
Good morning, Miss Woodhouse. Oh, I wish I had a donkey. That's the thing for us all to get about on. In country life, I conceive it to be a sort of necessity. For let a woman have ever so many resources, it is not possible for her always to be shut up at home. Oh, this time last year, I was exploring King's Weston in Mr. Suckling's barouche landau. And it is such weather for exploring.
Well, why should we not have a trip? Box Hill is a pleasant distance.
Oh, picnic! Oh, I should like that of all things. You may depend upon me. I will certainly come. I only want to be going somewhere. Oh, name the day. I'll leave it all to you. You will allow me to bring Jane Fairfax, and of course we must have Knightley, Miss Bates, Frank Churchill, Miss...
If it had not been for you, I should certainly have lost all the happiness of this party. Yesterday was so hot, I'd quite determined not to come.
Yes, you were very cross, and I do not know why. I was a kinder friend to you than you deserved. But you were humble. You begged hard to be commanded to come.
Don't say I was cross. The heat overcame me.
It is hotter today.
I am comfortable today.
Ah, you have your feelings under command.
Your command, yes.
Well, I cannot always be with you. It is best to believe your temper under your own command rather than mine.
You are always with me.
Nobody speaks except ourselves. And it is rather too much to be talking nonsense for the entertainment of seven silent people.
I say nothing of which I'm afraid. Let everyone on the hill hear me if they can. Our companions are excessively stupid. What shall we do to rouse them? Ladies and gentlemen, I am ordered by Miss Woodhouse to say that she desires to know what you are all thinking of.
Oh. Is Miss Woodhouse sure that she would like to hear what we are all thinking of?
Oh, no. On no account in the world. It's the very last thing I would stand the brunt of just now.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm ordered by Miss Woodhouse to say that she waives her right of knowing exactly what you all may be thinking of, and only requires something very entertaining from each of you. I am entertaining enough already. She only demands from each of you either one thing very clever, be it in prose or verse, or two things moderately clever, or three things very dull indeed, and she engages to laugh heartily at them all.
Oh, well, very well, then I need not be uneasy. Three things very dull indeed. Well, that will just do for me, you know. I shall be sure to say three dull things as soon as ever I open my mouth shut. You don't think I shall?
Oh, Miss Bates, there may be a difficulty. Pardon me, but you should be limited as to number, only three at once.
Oh. Well, to be sure, yes, I see what she means, and I will try to hold my tongue. I must make myself very disagreeable, must I not, Mr. Knightley? Or she would not have said such a thing to an old friend.
I like your plan. I am making a conundrum. How will a conundrum reckon?
Low, I'm afraid, sir, very low. But we shall be indulgent, Father, especially to anyone who leads the way.
No, we'll not reckon low. Come, sir, pray, let me hear it.
Here it is. What two letters of the alphabet are there that express perfection?
I'm sure I do not know.
I will tell you. M and A. Emma! Do you understand?
This explains the sort of clever thing that is wanted. But perfection should not have come quite so soon.
For myself, I protest. I must be excused. I'm not at all fond of that sort of thing. I had an acrostic once sent to me upon my own name, which I was not at all pleased with. I knew who it came from. Abominable puppy. Miss Woodhouse must excuse me. I do not pretend to be a wit. I have a great vivacity in my own way, but pass us, if you please, Mr. Churchill. Pass Mr. E., Knightley, Jane, and myself. We have nothing clever to say. Not one of us.
Oh. Yes, yes, pray pass me. I have nothing to say that can entertain Miss Woodhouse. Ah, shall we walk, Augusta?
With all my heart.
Happy couple. How well they suit one another. They only knew each other a few weeks, I think, in Bath. How many a man has committed himself on a short acquaintance and rued it all the rest of his life.
Such things do occur, undoubtedly.
Miss Fairfax, you were speaking.
I was only going to observe that though such unfortunate circumstances do occur, both to men and women, I cannot imagine them to be very frequent. Hasty and imprudent attachment may arise, but there is generally time to recover from it afterwards. It can only be weak and irresolute characters who will suffer an unfortunate acquaintance to be an oppression forever.
Well, I have so little confidence in my own judgment that whenever I marry, I hope someone will choose my wife for me. Will you, Miss Woodhouse? I should like anybody fixed on by you.
Oh, and make her like myself.
By all means, if you can.
Very well. I undertake the commission.
The carriages are here, Aunt.
Oh.
Shall we join Mrs. Elton?
Oh, if you please, my dear. Yes, I'm quite ready. Yes, goodbye.
Emma? Emma, I must once more speak to you as I have been used to. I cannot see you acting wrong without a remonstrance. How could you be so unfeeling to Miss Bates? Emma, I had not thought it possible.
Okay, how could I help saying what I did? Nobody could have helped it. I know there's not a better creature in the world, but you must allow that what is good and what is ridiculous are most unfortunately blended in her.
They are blended, I acknowledge, and were she your equal in situation, I would not quarrel with you for any liberties of manner. But Emma, she is poor. She is sunk from the comforts she was born into, and, if she lives into old age, must probably sink more. You, whom she has seen grow up from a period when her notice was an honour, to have you now, in thoughtless spirits and pride of the moment, laugh at her and humble her, before her niece too, and before many others who may be guided by your treatment of her. This is not pleasant in you, Emma, and it is very far from pleasant to me. But I will tell you truths while I can, satisfied with proving myself your friend by very faithful counsel and trusting that you will sometime or other do me greater justice than you do now.
How could I have been so cruel? How could I have exposed myself to ill opinion and someone I value? And now he's left without my saying one word of gratitude. I cannot think of a morning more completely misspent and more to be abhorred in recollection. If attention in the future to Miss Bates could do away with the past, I may hope to be forgiven. I shall call on her tomorrow morning.
Oh, how kind you are. I suppose you have heard and have come to give us joy. This does not seem much like joy indeed to me.
Miss Bates.
It will be very trying for us to part with Jane after having had her for so long. And she has a dreadful headache just now, writing all the morning such long letters to Colonel Campbell, Mrs. Dixon. My dear, I said you will blind yourself, for there were tears in her eyes perpetually. Well, I cannot wonder. It is a great change.
Where, may I ask, is Miss Fairfax going?
Oh, you are very kind. To Mrs. Smallridge, charming woman, to have the charge of her three little girls, delightful children. Jane will only be 4 miles from Maple Grove. Oh. In our good Mrs. Elton. She would not let Jane say no. And sure enough, yesterday evening it was all settled that Jane should go.
Miss Fairfax, I suppose, had been making up her mind the whole day.
I dare say. After Box Hill, we all came back here for tea, but Mr. Frank Churchill was sent a message to attend his aunt, and he left directly without waiting at all. And it was after tea that Jane spoke to Mrs. Elton.
Well, Good. I hope her engagement will have every alleviation that is possible.
Oh, you are so noble in your ideas.
And when is she to leave you?
Very soon. That is the worst of it.
Mr. Knightley is here to say goodbye, Emma.
Oh.
I could not go away without seeing you. But I have no time to spare and therefore must be gone directly. I am going to London to spend a few days with John and Isabella. Have you anything to send or say?
Nothing at all. But this is a sudden scheme.
I have been thinking of it for some time.
Dear Emma has just been to call on Mrs. and Miss Bates, Mr. Knightley. She is always very attentive to them.
Well, Emma, give me your hand. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Come and sit by the fire, my dear. Evening will be drawing in soon.
Yes, Papa. Dear Miss Fairfax, let me be of any use to you I can be. Let me prevail upon you to come and spend a day at Hartfield. Signed, Emma Woodhouse. Yes.
Miss Fairfax's compliments and thanks, but she will see nobody.
Thank you. Dear Mrs. Weston, please accept condolences on behalf of myself and Mr. Woodhouse upon the sudden and sad death of Mrs. Churchill. Yes?
Emma, can you come to Randall's now, this morning? Mrs. Weston wants to see you.
Cannot you, my dear Emma, form a guess at what you are about to hear?
Well, so far as it relates to Frank Churchill, I do guess.
You are right. He has been here this morning on a most extraordinary errand, to announce an attachment. More than an attachment, indeed. An engagement. What will you say, Emma? What will anybody say when it is known that Frank Churchill and Miss Fairfax are engaged? Nay, that they have been long engaged.
Jane Fairfax? God, you're not serious.
You may well be amazed. There has been a solemn engagement between them ever since October.
What?
Formed at Weymouth and kept a secret from everybody.
Well, this is a circumstance which I must think of at least half a day before I can comprehend it.
It has hurt me, Emma, very much. It has hurt his father equally. Some part of his conduct we cannot excuse.
Oh, I will give you all the relief in my power. There was a period in the early part of our acquaintance when I did like him. And I was very much disposed to be attached to him. Nay, was attached. And how it came to cease is perhaps the wonder. Fortunately, however, it did cease. I really have for some time past, for at least 3 months, cared nothing for him.
Oh, Emma!
But you may believe me, Mrs. Weston, that is the simple truth.
Oh, Mr. Weston will be almost as relieved as myself.
But that does not acquit him. How could he tell what mischief he might be doing? And how could she bear such behaviour? To look on while while repeated attentions were offered to another woman in front of her face?
There were misunderstandings between them, Emma. He said so expressly.
Jane was actually on the point of going to Mrs. Smallridge to be governess.
He knew nothing about it. Till yesterday, he was in the dark as to her plans. And it was the discovery of what she was doing that determined him to come forward at once. Own all to his uncle, throw himself on his kindness, and put an end to the miserable state of concealment. While poor Mrs. Churchill lived, there could not have been a chance.
Well, I suppose we shall gradually grow reconciled to the idea. And I wish them happy.
Well, Miss Woodhouse, is not this the oddest news that ever was?
What do you mean?
That Jane Fairfax and Mr. Frank Churchill are to be married. Had you any idea of his being in love with her? You perhaps might. You can see into anybody's heart.
You seriously ask me, Harriet, whether I imagined him attached to another woman. At the very time I was tacitly encouraging you to give way to your human feelings.
Me?
Yes.
You do not think I care about Mr. Frank Churchill?
Am I to suppose that...
I know we agreed never to name him, but considering how superior he is to everybody else, I should not have thought it possible that I could be supposed to mean any other person.
Harriet! Let us understand each other now without the possibility of further mistake. Are you speaking of Mr. Knightley?
To be sure I am. Well, I thought you knew. When we talked about him, it was as clear as possible.
Well, not quite. I'm sure that the service Frank Churchill rendered you in protecting you from the gypsies was spoken of.
Oh, dear. I recollect what you mean. But I was thinking of a much more precious circumstance. Of Mr. Knightley coming and asking me to dance when Mr. Elton would not stand up with me.
Oh, God! This has been a most deplorable mistake. What is to be done?
You must think one 500 million times more above me than the other. But, Miss Woodhouse, they were your words. More wonderful things have happened. Matches of greater disparity have taken place.
Well, I know.
What if Mr. Knightley does not mind the disparity? I hope, dear Miss Woodhouse, you will not try to put difficulties in the way. You are too good for that, I am sure.
Have you any idea of Mr. Knightley returning your affection?
Yes. I must say I have.
Is it not... Might he not have Mr. Martin's interest in view?
Mr. Martin? Oh, no, indeed. I hope I know better now than to care for Mr. Martin. I should never have presumed to think of Mr. Knightley if it weren't for you. But now I seem to feel that I may deserve him. And that if he does choose me, it will not be anything so very wonderful.
I only venture to declare, Harriet, that Mr. Knightley's the last man in the world who would unintentionally give any woman the idea of his feeling more for her than he does.
Thank you, Miss Woodhouse. Now, I must get back to Miss Bullard's.
Oh, God! But I had never seen her. Harriet Smith and Mr. Knightley. Harriet Smith and Mr. Knightley? How to understand it all? Why is it so much worse that Harriet should be in love with Mr. Knightley and not Frank Churchill? Why is the evil so dreadfully increased by Harriet's having some hope of return? Because no one must marry Mr. Knightley. No one must marry Mr. Knightley but me. Did I not know till now how much of my happiness depended on Mr. Knightley?
Good morning, Miss Woodhouse.
And now he is gone.
Miss Woodhouse?
And the days are lonely and melancholy.
Poor Mr. Perry is bilious.
Why did I ever bring Harriet forward? I should have left her where she ought to be and where he told me she ought.
She could have been married now to the unexceptionable young man who could have made her happy and respectable in the line of life to which she belongs. But Mr. Knightley? Harriet Smith? And Mr. Knightley? With what insufferable vanity have I believed myself in the secret of everybody's feelings? With what unpardonable arrogance proposed to arrange everybody's destiny? Harriet Smith and Mr. Knightley. I've been proved universally mistaken. And I've brought evil on Harriet, on myself, and worse, on Mr.
How do you do?
How do you do? How are John, Isabella and the boys?
Very well.
When did you leave them?
Only this morning. I just looked into the dining room, but I was not wanted. Oh. And I prefer being out of doors.
Oh, you have some news to hear now you are come back that will rather surprise you.
Have I? Of what nature?
Of the best in the world. A wedding.
If you mean Miss Fairfax and Frank Churchill, I have heard that already.
How is it possible?
I had a few lines from Mr. Weston this morning.
You are probably less surprised than any of us. I seem to have been doomed to blindness.
Time, my dear Emma. Time will heal the wound. The abominable scoundrel. He will soon be gone. They will soon be in Yorkshire.
Oh, you're very kind, but you're mistaken. And I must set you right. I am not in want of any sort of compassion.
Emma, are you indeed?
No.
No. No, I understand you. Forgive me. I am pleased that you can say even so much. It will not be very long, I hope, before that becomes the acknowledgement of more than your reason.
Oh, Mr. Knightley, I'm in a very extraordinary situation. I cannot let you continue in error. I have never been attached to the person we are speaking of. I was tempted by his attentions. My vanity was flattered. And I allowed myself to appear pleased. But lately I thought them a habit. A trick. Nothing that called for seriousness on my side. That was my good fortune. I was somehow or other safe from him.
I have never had a high opinion of Frank Churchill. I may, however, have underrated him. With such a woman, he has a chance. And for her sake, whose happiness will be involved in his good character, I shall certainly wish him well.
I have no doubt of their being very happy together. I believe them to be very mutually and sincerely attached.
He is a most fortunate man. So early in life, at 23, to have drawn such a prize. A man would always wish to give a woman a better home than the one he takes her from. And he who can do it, where there is no doubt of her regard, must, I think, be the happiest of mortals.
You speak as if you envied him.
And I do envy him, Emma. In one respect, he is the object of my envy. You will not ask me what is the point of my envy. You are determined, I see, to have no curiosity. You are wise. But I cannot be wise. Emma, I must tell you what you will not ask, though I may wish it unsaid the next moment.
Oh, then don't speak it. Don't speak it. Take a little time. Consider. Do not commit yourself.
Thank you. You are going in, I suppose?
No. I should like to take another turn. I stopped you ungraciously just now, Mr. Knightley, and gave you pain. But if you have any wish to speak openly to me as a friend, indeed, you may command me.
As a friend? No, I have no wish. Stay, yes, why should I hesitate? I have gone too far already for concealment. Emma, tell me, have I no chance of ever succeeding? My dearest Emma, for dearest you will always be, whatever the event of this hour's conversation, my dearest, most beloved Emma, tell me at once, say no if it is to be said. Oh, I cannot make speeches, Emma. If I loved you less, I might be able to talk about it more. But you know what I am. You hear nothing but truth from me. I have blamed you and lectured you, and you have borne it as no other woman in England would have borne it. God knows I have been a very indifferent lover. But you understand me. You understand my feelings and will return them. If you can. At present, I ask only to hear. Just once. To hear your voice.
What did I say? Just what I ought, of course. A lady always does. And so all was settled. Oh, if you knew how much I love everything that is decided and open. Of course, it was impossible that I should leave Papa, as it was impossible that Papa should quit Hartfield. And for so long as I was to remain there, then Mr. Knightley vowed to make Hartfield his home too. It was a plan to promote the happiness of all, which left only one person unhappy. Oh, dear. It really was too much to hope even of Harriet Smith that she could be in love with more than three men in one year.
I have some news for you, Emma.
Hmm? Good or bad?
I do not know what it ought to be called. There is one subject, and I hope it one, on which we do not think alike. Does nothing occur to you? Do you not recollect? Harriet Smith. You are prepared for the worst, I see. And very bad it is. Harriet Smith marries Robert Martin.
No. It's impossible.
It is so indeed. I have it from him. He left me an hour ago.
I cannot believe it. It seems such an impossibility. Are you sure that she has absolutely and downright accepted him?
Mm-hmm.
Did you not misunderstand, Mr. Martin?
No.
You were both talking of other things, of business, shows of cattle or new drills. And might you not, in the confusion of so many subjects, mistake it? But it was not Harriet's hand he was certain of. It was the dimensions of some famous ox.
Dare you say this? Oh, do you dare suppose me to be such a great blockhead as not to know what a man is talking of? What do you deserve?
Oh, Mr. Knightley, I always deserve the best treatment because I never put up with any other.
You always call me Mr. Knightley. I want you to call me something else. But I do not know what.
Impossible. I can never call you anything but Mr. Knightley. But I will promise to call you once by your Christian name. Mm. On the day when I shall say it for better, for worse.
In episode 2 of Emma by Jane Austen, dramatised by April De Angelis, Emma Woodhouse was Eve Best and Mr. Knightley, Robert Bathurst. Frank Churchill, Tom Hollander. Mrs. Weston, Patience Tomlinson. Mr. Weston, Andrew Wincott. Miss Bates, Marcia Warren. Jane Fairfax, Beth Chalmers. Harriet Smith, Ellie Bevan. Mrs. Elton, Josie Lawrence. Mr. Woodhouse, Norman Rodway. Mr. Elton, David Bamber. And the servant, Helen Ayres. The music was by Martin Suter and the director was Jonquil Panting.
Hall in Somersetshire was a man who, for his own amusement, never took up any book but the baronetage. There he found occupation for an idle hour and consolation in a distressed one.
Elliot of Kellynch Hall. Walter Elliot, born March 1st, 1760, married July 15th, 1784, Elizabeth of South Park in the county of Gloucester. By which lady he has issue?
Elizabeth, now 29.
Anne, now 26.
Mary, now 22.
Persuasion by Jane Austen. Dramatized for radio in three parts by Micheline Wandor, with Juliet Stevenson as Anne Elliot, Tim Brierley as Frederick Wentworth, and Sirica Cusack as Jane Austen. Part 1, Old Friends and New Meetings.
Heir presumptive, William Walter Elliot, Esquire, a distant cousin.
At 54, Sir Walter Elliot was still a very fine man. And indeed, he believed himself and Elizabeth as blooming as ever amidst the wreck of the good looks of everybody else.
Anne is haggard, Mary is coarse, and the rapid increase of the crow's foot about Lady Russell's temples has long been a distress to me.
Lady Russell had been the intimate friend of Lady Elliot.
Mary has acquired a little artificial importance through her marriage.
Married December 16th, 1810, Charles, son and heir of Charles Musgrove, Esquire, of Uppercross in the county of Somerset.
And Anne? Well, Anne is only Anne.
To Lady Russell, however, Anne was a most dear and highly valued goddaughter, favourite and friend.
I love all three girls, but it is only in Anne that I can fancy the mother to revive again.
Anne's bloom vanished early. I have no hope of ever reading her name in any other page of my favourite work. No, every quality of alliance must rest with Elizabeth.
Since her mother's death 13 years before, Elizabeth had been mistress of Kellynch Hall.
I would so rejoice to be certain of being properly solicited by Baronet Blood within the next 12 months or so. Father, please put the book away.
I suppose I must.
Why are you sighing, Father?
I'm sighing at the prospect of having to deal with the bills of my tradespeople. We must retrench, Elizabeth.
Are you serious?
Indeed. Does it occur to you, my dear, that there is any one article in which we can retrench?
We can refrain from you furnishing the drawing room.
I fear that will not be enough.
We could take no presents down to Anne.
Yes, that is possible, but I fear that too is insufficient.
Well, I can think of nothing more, Father, without compromising our dignity.
My very sentiments. Oh, Elizabeth, if only you had married your cousin William Elliot.
I confess I found my cousin extremely agreeable. But despite being encouraged, he never arrived to visit Kellynch Hall.
Indeed. He united himself to a rich woman of far inferior birth. However, Elizabeth, you are wearing black ribbons for his wife.
Father, there is not a baronet from A to Z whom my feelings could have so willingly acknowledged as my equal. But he cannot be pardoned.
I suppose not. I fear I shall have to call in Mr. Shepherd to advise us. Oh, dear.
Mr. Shepherd, Sir Walter's agent, a cautious lawyer, deferred to the excellent judgment of Lady Russell, who, in her turn, deferred to the judgment of another.
And so, Anne, I have decided to consult you.
Well, Lady Russell, I think Father must clear away the claims of his creditors as soon as possible. I feel this is a duty. And then there are the horses.
What about the horses, Anne?
He must dispose of both pairs of horses.
But Anne, your father is a baronet.
Father will not be lessened in the eyes of sensible people. He will only be doing what very many of our first families have done.
Well, I'm a little nervous of putting these things to him.
Lady Russell, if anyone can persuade Father, you can.
What? Every comfort of life knocked off?
Well, not every comfort, Sir Walter.
Journeys, London, servants, horses, restrictions everywhere. What do you think, Mr. Shepherd?
Well, Sir Walter...
Quit Kellynch Hall at once than remain in it on such disgraceful terms.
Why, Sir Walter, what an idea. Still, you know best about quitting Kellynch Hall.
What?
Well, you could not possibly alter your style of living in your own house. You'll have to move.
And where should I go?
Well, Sir Walter, there is Bath.
Oh, Lady Russell, not Bath.
Be quiet, Anne.
This does not concern you.
Or another house in the country?
Yes, a house in your own neighbourhood, where you will still be near Mary and have my society.
Bath is only 50 miles from Kellynch, and I spend some part of every winter there.
I dislike Bath, Lady Russell.
It is a mere prejudice, Anne. A larger society will improve your spirits.
No, it is quite impossible. I could not bear the degradation of being known to design letting my house.
We could advertise very discreetly.
Advertise? Please do not mention that word. I forbid it. If I am spontaneously solicited by some most unexceptionable applicant, on my terms and as a great favour, I will consider letting Kellynch Hall. Ah, Elizabeth, my dear, I need your judgment.
On what, Father?
And Mrs. Clay. Oh, do come in and help us.
If I can, Sir Walter.
Lady Russell had another reason for wishing that Sir Walter and Elizabeth would remove to Bath. Elizabeth had been lately forming an intimacy with Mrs. Clay, a daughter of Mr. Shepherd, who had returned after an unprosperous marriage. Lady Russell believed Mrs. Clay had designs upon Sir Walter.
May I observe, Sir Walter, that the present juncture is much in our favour. Now that we have peace, all our rich naval officers will be coming ashore wanting a home. Now, if a rich officer were to come our way...
He will be a very lucky man, Shepherd, eh? What do you think, Mrs. Clay?
I quite agree with my father that a sailor might be a very desirable tenant. I have known a good deal of the profession.
The Navy had done so much for us, Father.
Oh, the profession has its utility, but I should be sorry to see any friend of mine belonging to it.
And why is that, Father?
It is the means of bringing persons of obscure birth into undue distinction. And it cuts up a man's youth and vigour most horribly.
The sea is no beautifier, certainly. But then, is it not the same with many other professions?
It is only the lot of those who are not obliged to follow any profession who can live in the country and hold the blessings of health and of good appearance.
Very true, Mrs. Clay, very true.
I do know of an admiral.
What did you say? An admiral?
An Admiral Croft.
And who is he?
He was in the Trafalgar action and has been in the East Indies since.
Then I take it for granted that his face is about as orange as the cuffs and capes of my livery, eh?
Admiral Croft is a little weather-beaten, to be sure, but he is quite the gentleman. He happens by sheer chance to be wanting a comfortable home as soon as possible.
Is he a married man?
Yes, and without children.
Have you seen Mrs. Croft?
Oh, indeed. A very well-spoken, genteel and shrewd lady. In fact, she is sister to a gentleman who lived amongst us once. Now, bless me, what was his name? He came to consult me about a trespass of one of his neighbours.
You mean Mr. Wentworth, I suppose?
The very man. He had the curacy of Monkford, you know, Sir Walter, some time back.
Oh, Mr. Wentworth, the curate of Monkford. Ah, you misled me by the term gentleman.
Well, at any rate, Admiral Croft is certainly a gentleman.
Admiral Croft, eh? I have let my house to Admiral Croft. That sounds extremely well. Very much better than to a mere mister. Elizabeth, my dear, you're very silent.
I'm very happy with the plan, Father.
Excellent. Mr. Shepherd, you are empowered to act on my behalf.
Splendid. Anne? Oh, where has Anne gone?
Anne had left the room without anyone noticing, to seek the comfort of cool air for her flushed cheeks.
A few months more, and he may perhaps be walking here.
He was not Mr. Wentworth, the former curate of Monkford, but his brother, Captain Frederick Wentworth, a remarkably fine young man, with a great deal of intelligence, spirit, and brilliancy. They met when Anne was an extremely pretty girl of 19, with gentleness, modesty, taste and feeling, and an attachment rapidly developed between them.
Lady Russell! Frederick! Captain Wentworth and I would like to be engaged.
But he has no fortune.
He is very confident that he will soon be rich.
Anne Elliot, you cannot throw yourself away on a young man who has the most uncertain profession and no connections worth speaking of.
Sir Walter was no more accommodating.
It would be churlish of me to withhold my consent, but I'm sure that it would be a very degrading alliance.
A most unfortunate alliance, Sir Walter. How right you are.
But Lady Russell! Father, he is brilliant!
He is headstrong.
Anne might have been able to withstand her father's ill will,